we're talking to Chrissy G.
Hello.
Known as Grub.
Yeah, that's me.
That's you. We might just start with the first choice, which is Some Like It Hot.
Yes, Some Like It Hot. One of my favourite films, probably the one that I watch the most when I have a hangover.
It is a good hangover
it's
film.
It's a great hangover movie, and it's just, you know, it's really fun, lighthearted comedy, starring Marilyn Monroe, who I love. I think she's wonderful, and she's a great comedic actress, despite what I think people hear about her. Especially with Some Like It Hot, where there are a few scenes where you hear rumours about how, oh, it took her 57 takes to do this line and blah, blah, blah. So, but when you consider the fact that she was probably slightly unhinged at that point and pregnant and had a miscarriage and had several miscarriages and stuff, and her relationship with the director, Billy Wilder, was not good at all. It probably was a stressful job for her. So on that kind of side, I don't blame her. But yeah, I just love that film. And
she does hold her own against, like, Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis.
Tony Curtis. Oh, and he's another one who's just incredible in that film. I just think he's probably my favourite part to that film, the Cary Grant accent.
I love the Cary Grant accent.
When he's the playing the rich millionaire.
That's my boat over there. I work for Shell Oil.
Do you know Shell? Yes.
Yeah.
And just the ending and everything about it, I just love. And the soundtrack is spectacular, and I've really enjoyed the songs that Marilyn sings on it as well. So
just the sight of Jack Lemmon with a rose in his mouth coming back at 5 a.m. from
with
his
date.
With the
maracas. Yeah. Oh, dun, dun, so great. Dun,
dun. Can I just ask, is this the one that ends where they're on a boat?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
That's one.
It's
this is Justine movie. Oldman, and she's joining us tonight as well.
Just a little bit.
She'll be piping up from time to time.
With a really funny ending. What is he?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
We can't spoil it.
We can't
spoil
it. It's
a
famous
ending.
That's what I remember most about it, is that ending.
It is a great ending.
Yeah.
But the first thing I wanted to ask you about it was, how did that get introduced to you?
When I was 15 or 16, Centre Cinema in Canberra, which is where Academy is now, for those who know, was closing down. And Some Like It Hot was one of the movies that they were showing as part of their end of business festival. And a friend of mine who I went to high school with, Ashley, she had seen the film before and loved it. And she said, oh, we have to go and see this movie. It's brilliant. And she was like fully in love with Marilyn Monroe. And so we went with my dad, who'd seen it before, but thought, you know, he'd come for a laugh. And that was my first Marilyn Monroe movie that I'd ever seen.
And how old were you when that was
that
on?
I was 15. So in year 10.
Oh, okay.
So about 10 years ago, 11 years ago, the first time I saw that film. And I've seen it a couple of times since in the theatre. But yeah, seeing it in the cinema for the first time really kind of... I always remember that scene where Marilyn's character first gets introduced and she's walking down...
Like a Jell-O,
Jell-O on Springs. Walking down the train platform and the steam comes off the train.
Yeah.
And I read somewhere that the costume department sawed off like a half an inch from one of her heels, so she was uneven as walking, and that's part of like her movement down the platform.
It is a great introduction.
So just kind of always stuck in my brain, and it's just such a funny film. And
centered around like a massacre, though, like St. Valentine's
Day massacre. Yeah, the St. Valentine's Day massacre. The two musicians who are kind of struggling and not making any money, and they can't get any jobs, and they witness this massacre, and to hide from the mob, they decide to dress as women and join this women's like jazz band that goes to Florida and ends up in this hotel playing for rich old millionaires. And then, you know, of course the mob shows up and they have this big goose chase where they're trying to hide from, and it's just brilliantly funny, very like,
and
excellent
they're
comedy.
Pretending to be women, and one of them's interested in Marilyn Monroe.
Yes, one
character.
Of them. Yes, Tony Curtis is interested in Marilyn Monroe's character, Sugar.
Sugar cane.
Kowalczyk.
Sugar cane Kowalczyk. Yeah.
And so you know, he's kind of got all this where he's running around getting changed from his woman's costume into the millionaire costume, where he does the Cary Grant accent, and you know, he has to get them out on this boat and then get them off again. And then the guy who owns the boat is a millionaire staying in the hotel who is interested in Jack Lemmon's character.
Who is by far the ugliest woman in film history. Incredible. The worst cross-dresser you've ever seen.
But nobody's perfect.
That's true. Anytime you see Jack Lemmon run in a dress with that so wig great. On, it's amazing.
Yeah, and another thing that I read about that was that they actually had a stagecoach who was like a cabaret performer, a man who did cabaret, and he started to give them lessons on how to work in high heels. And Jack Lemmon said, you know what, I don't want to know how to work in walk in high heels. I want to look like a man who doesn't know how to walk in high heels, which is perfect for the character.
Exactly. Yeah.
So,
and do you think, like, looking at movies like Tootsie and Mrs. Doubtfire, when I see those ones, it just always makes me think back.
Yeah, to absolutely. That. Like, absolutely. I mean, I'm not terribly familiar with the cross-dressing oof of cinema, but
It is a large genre at the moment.
But yeah, but whenever I actually watched again recently,
I always think of Some Like It Hot and things like that. That seems the earliest sort of...
Yeah, it's a great
film. Like comedy.
It's just it's just so funny. And it's got a lot of good snappy one-liners, and the bellboy character always makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Is very kind of fresh. Mm. And
fresh is a great word for the 20s it was at the time, wasn't it?
A bunch of us girls are appearing at the hotel. Sweet Sue and her society syncopators.
Oh, your society girl.
Oh, yes, quite. You know, Bryn Mawr, Vassar. We're just doing this for a lark.
Syncopators. Does that mean you play that very fast music, jazz?
Yeah, real hot.
Oh, well, I guess some like it hot. I personally prefer classical music.
Oh, I do, too. As a matter of fact, I spent 3 years at the Sheboygan Conservatory of Music.
Good school. And your family doesn't object to your career?
They do, indeed. Daddy threatened to cut me off without a cent. But I don't care. We're such a bore, you know, coming out parties.
Inauguration ball.
Opening of the opera.
Riding to hounds.
And always the same 400.
You know, it's amazing we never ran into each other before. I'm sure I would have remembered anybody as attractive as you are.
You're very kind. Mm. I'll bet you're also gentle and helpless.
I beg your pardon?
You see, I have this theory about men who wear glasses.
What theory?
I'll tell you when I get to know you better. What are you doing tonight?
Tonight?
I thought maybe you could come to the hotel and hear us play.
I would like to, but that would be rather difficult.
Why?
I only come ashore twice a day when the tide goes out.
Oh.
It's on account of these shells. That's my hobby.
You collect shells?
Yes, so did my father and my grandfather. You might say we had a passion for shells. That's why we named the oil company after it.
Shell oil?
Please, no names. Just call me Junior.
Jagger!
Yeah, and Jack Lemmon, I love Jack Lemmon. I love this movie. I love The Apartment.
Yeah.
Him just over and over to say, I'm a girl, I'm a girl. While there's a train full of women falling into his carriage and having a party and getting whiskey out. And
it's... Yeah, definitely. And I also love Tony Curtis when he has to get back from the boat. And he like sprints back to the hotel, and he like he puts on his makeup and his wig, and he jumps into the bath, and then and then at the end of the scene he stands up and you see he's still wearing the full suit, and he's just sitting under the bubbles.
Yeah, he's singing away and Jack Lemmon's like confused, doesn't know what the hell's going on. Yeah.
It's just fantastic.
It's a good time.
It's a good time, great soundtrack, you know, fun black and white movie, a lot of fun people.
It is literally one of the funniest movies.
Oh, absolutely. I really can't think of anything that I would rather like watch as many times as I have seen that film.
Yeah.
I just will watch it over and over and over and over, and it's just, you know, it's a classic, and it's just a fun movie to put on, you know. It's not too taxing, but it's also not like a brain dead comedy.
Yeah.
No, it is not.
So it's great.
I think you've hit it on the head. I think as far as hangover movies go,
just I think it's want.
A winner.
I nailed it.
Yeah,
I have to remember it next time.
You know what the worst movie is to watch with a hangover?
The Labyrinth.
Yellow Submarine.
Oh yeah, that would be just.
The Labyrinth. I watched that at a party. We had this huge party. I think I was at school, maybe, or at the end of school.
Yeah.
We had this huge party, and the next day it was on, and everyone sort of watched it, and then I was like, "Oh my god,
mistake.
That was."
TV, yeah, that's why I say The Labyrinth. We did the same thing, and we put The Labyrinth on, and we got about a quarter of the way through it. Like, nah, man, this is too stressful. Turn it off, put on The Lion King. Way better.
You're all weeping. Oh, my God. I feel terrible inside and outside.
It's a jolly good time. I should watch that again.
A jolly good time.
Yeah.
That is good, isn't it? We really should watch it again.
Yeah, you can't help but smile watching it. Yeah. Now, I was going to ask you about Marilyn Monroe. Have you seen... What else have you seen?
How to Marry a Millionaire. Have you seen that one? That's a great movie. She plays this character who is obviously trying to bag a millionaire, but she has terrible, terrible eyesight. But she never wears her glasses because boys don't make passes at girls who wear glasses. And so there's this hilarious bit where she's trying to catch a plane to, like, Denver or something, and because she's not wearing her glasses, she starts talking to this handsome older man who obviously is wealthy, and she gets on the wrong plane and ends up in California or something like that. So she's great in that one as well. I just think she's a great comedic actress. I haven't really seen many of her dramas, but yeah. She's also really great in 7 Year Itch, which is, of course, the classic movie with the white dress flowing over the grate.
Up, yeah.
But you actually don't see that shot in the film.
No.
That famous shot of her standing over the grate. It's not an outtake, but it's cropped so that you don't see her full figure. You just see her legs and the dress going up. I just think she's, like, really... People sell her short. And I think a lot of people are quite cruel about her.
I think
that's very interesting. She's very intelligent.
Yeah.
I think they say, oh, you know, she just played the one character, but
you
can't just go up there and be yourself and the checks roll in. It doesn't work that way.
Mm.
You have to have some spark and timing. Obviously, she's got the timing, and especially in Some Like It Hot. Like, like I said, she really keeps up with those two nutters.
Definitely.
Because the pace is so... That's the other thing about the movie. It doesn't stop.
Yeah, it's snappy. Snappy.
And it just, goes crazy and crazier and crazier and...
And she has great facial expressions as well. If people, you just kind of imagine her in a photograph with her head tilted back and the mouth open and the eyes half closed. But her, like, her contortionist face when she's acting is, she's brilliant. I think she's a great actress and she deserves a bit better treatment than I think people give her.
I think it's the voice too. I think people think the voice is put on or something.
Yeah.
There's something submissive maybe about the voice and...
What's that other one where she's with Jane Russell? Is it Jane Russell? Oh, I can't remember the name of it though. But in that film she even says the lines, I'm smart, but men don't like it when I'm that way.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, very close to her. I think that she probably had to live her life. Like she's probably a lot smarter than she let on, And that's kind of how a lot of women have had to be, I think, throughout history. So I think she's an interesting woman and a great actress, and that's why I really love that movie. One of the reasons I love that movie.
Because of Marilyn.
Yeah, I just think she's great.
Well, look at this segue from one blonde
to
a legally blonde.
Legally blonde.
Now, that was the one on the list. I was like, that was, the first one you wrote down, and I was like, legally blonde?
Yeah.
And I wrote down, almost straight away. I was like, okay. For me, it's a good movie.
Mm.
But what made that movie such a hit that it was? I mean, now it's a stage show. Mm. I think it's in Sydney maybe now or within the next few months. It's a huge performance stage show musical now.
Yeah. So. I'm not sure exactly why it is, just captured the the minds of so many people.
Because it's a sort of paint-by-numbers plot.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. She's blonde, but she's intelligent. And
I think she's just a really endearing character, and she's not nasty. She's just this nice girl who wants to be happy, and she, strives to be happy with this guy who doesn't respect her, and then she just kind of realizes her own potential and her own worth, and it's a story about this girl who decides, I can be just as good as these people who treat me badly because of the way that I look or the way that I act. And she ends up, really kind of proving to them that she is just as good despite, being interested in feminine things and being a dumb blonde, air quotes dumb blonde, and she's, got this silly little dog, and she's just a polite, nice girl who just, does well, and I really enjoy that. And I think as far as, movie role models for girls, you could go a lot worse than her. And I think, it's just, great story. Blonde girl thinks she's going to marry some guy. He is cruel to her. She beats him at his own game. It's great. Like, I just think it's a great story. And then she wins, you know, respect of people at the end, and she wins the court case at the end. Sorry. By, you know, knowing about things that other people have dismissed as frivolous and flippant, and like, why would we care about the chemicals you use in a perm? Like, it's irrelevant, and nobody would ever be interested in that because we're serious lawyer types. But, you know, that's her knowledge of feminine things and femininity, like traditionally feminine things, like a perm, is what wins the day and gets the person, you know, gets her friend off from a murder and puts the real killer away. It's like, these things have a worth, even if that's not what you're interested in. That's fine. But it's like, you shouldn't be cruel or dismissive of people who are interested in that sort of thing and have that, you know, to contribute, you know, takes all sorts. And I just like that movie. I think it's a great little story about somebody who beats her detractors at their own game.
Yeah. And I think the whole way through, she maintains that integrity and that personality.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. And nice, she helps person, all of the people around her.
Even when they're being mean to her.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she makes friends, which I love. She makes friends with the new girlfriend of the ex-boyfriend, which I think is a great, and then they end up like telling him to bugger off because he's useless.
Yeah.
Which I just really enjoy. It's a nice story about like female friendship and how you don't have to throw other women under the bus to do well.
Yeah. Which is refreshing.
Yeah, absolutely. It is really refreshing because it's so often like women get pitted against each other in competition for a man as opposed to like a job or a lawsuit or, you know, it's just...
Yeah.
Do you mean in movies as well as
in movies as well as life. Yeah, yeah, absolutely, you know. Or it's just even a movie where you have more than one female character.
That's true.
Yeah, so often, you know, like we'll put a token female in there and it just...
Mm. And especially that blonde... bimbo type, which is what they think is usually the bit part.
Or it's the Miss Congeniality version where, she's a rough and tumble bloke.
Tomboy.
She's a tomboy in a man's world, and yet now we're going to turn her into this fish out of water thing.
Yeah.
But it's very rare, like, it's very rare to have...
Yeah. Or you have the she's all that, you know, character, where it's like, oh, this, you know... unassuming mouse female character gets turned into this babe and now life's
like,
great.
Put a pair of glasses on her.
Take the glasses off.
Take the glasses off
and pull the hair out.
Put her in a nice
the
dress
end.
And put some makeup on her and like, oh, happily ever after. And it's like, Elle Woods, you know, succeeds without, you know, sacrificing
she doesn't have to
herself.
Who
it,
yeah.
Yeah, like, she can be a lawyer and a great lawyer at that and still, like, Pink and her little dog, which I just think is great. So
doesn't need to give all that up.
I'm the only one that believes her. Callahan totally thinks she's guilty.
Yeah, that's because men are big fat retards who don't.
Afternoon, ladies.
Hey, how's it going?
Paulette Bonafonte.
Oh my god.
I've got a package.
He's got a package.
How you doing today?
Fine.
Take it easy. See you later.
Take it easy.
That's great, Paulette. Is this the only interaction you two have ever had?
No. Sometimes I say okay instead of fine.
Well, why don't you offer him a cold beverage or a neck massage or something?
Oh, come on, what's the point?
Trust me, Paulette, you have all the equipment. You just need to read the manual. Do you know what I'm saying? Okay, I'm going to show you a little maneuver that my mother taught me in junior high. In my experience, it has a 98% success rate of getting a man's attention, and when used appropriately, it has an 83% rate of return on a dinner invitation.
Wow.
It's called the bend and snap.
And Reese is just I really like her.
She's great, and she's just so likable.
She is so likable. I can't think of any movie where I haven't, even when she's playing that crazy bitch in, was she a student?
In Election.
Election. Oh my god. Yeah. She is crazy, but just still so amazing to watch. And when I watched Legally Blonde, I thought I wouldn't like it.
That's what I mean. It's that type of movie where you look at it and you're she does win everyone
just
over.
Wins you over. That's the thing. It's,
that's the whole thing of the film. Like, you look at it and think, oh, some stupid movie about some blonde girl, who cares?
But I got it. As soon as I watched it, I'm like, I get it. It's like,
you know what? You have to go deeper.
Yeah. Are you gonna see the stage show?
I don't know, maybe. I'm not really a big fan of like stage shows in general, so it's probably
turning into
a
musical is
always
a winner.
I'm not really a musical kind of person generally.
Yeah. Well, like
I find it really hard going to the theatre.
Taking a straight story and turning it into a musical always ends up with exposition songs and this bit's from the movie you all know, but we're going to sing it and then
No, so probably not, because it's just, like, not my thing. But if people are into that, go nuts.
You won't stop them.
No, not at all. And also, Jennifer Coolidge is in that film, and she's hilarious, otherwise known as Stifler's mom.
Well, I know I'm a big fan of Jennifer from all the Christopher
Guest movies.
And the
whole, the bend and snap movement.
That woman's got a very weird choice of roles.
I it's not the highest form of comedy or whatever, but it's got some good slapstick moments, which I enjoy. So.
Yeah, slapstick's awesome.
Yeah.
Why would you ever...
A lot of people don't like it, though. Like, oh, some silly slapstick toilet humour. I'm like, this is great. Go home.
That's what I live for. That's why you have children. You're like, oh, they've got the same sense of humour as me. It's great.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But we'll move on to, you said you're not a big fan of musicals, but Grease.
Grease is the word, and Grease is the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
I love Grease. Grease is, I actually think when we were really little, we had a video of Grease that we taped off the TV.
Yeah,
and
without
it was,
a doubt.
I think it was the old Channel 7 or like Old Win or something like that, and had like Grundy ads in it.
Yeah,
and
stuff. Nice.
So yeah, I remember just like watching it over and over and over, and I could watch it like every day. Fun songs and
colors. It's a fun, just a fun movie from
lots of fun
from start to finish, and it's fun. It's like being a teacher.
Yeah.
I love just the previous school I was at. A lot of people like Grease, but we used to make announcements and we got the music teacher to take a xylophone up and do the ding, ding, ding. That was like the highlight of my teaching career, was hearing someone make
an
announcement using
that. You're a fair bit younger than us, Chrissy, but I remember when I was in primary school, there was a massive
Grease
revival.
Yeah.
It just came into the stratosphere and it was...
Well, they released the Grease Megamix and it was like...
And that was just like obsessed with it.
And it was at every
disco
that I've ever been to since.
So maybe that was when you would have been a bit younger than us, but you like...
I think it's one of those movies that's never gone away.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's ever gone away.
Because only that's how I knew it when it was going through that big resurgence. But do kids of...
Kids I teach now, they know it.
And was it when it was released really popular, or is it one of those slow burning?
That's a good question.
I think it was a stage show.
The stage show was huge.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I have watched like hour length documentary on YouTube.
I've seen the same documentary, but I actually have been to that stage show.
Oh, really?
As well, when I was probably about 13. Mum and I were in London and she took me to the stage show, and I was shocked because I had never fully comprehended before that point how filthy it was in some points. They dumbed it down a lot for the film, but there's a lot of stuff about like, you know, frangers and you know, blah blah, slept with and then there's a sex scene and then this person's pregnant, and just, you know, you watch the movie version and a lot of it just doesn't come through when you're a kid.
I don't know
how many times I'd seen it before I was like, oh, they were having sex
in
the back of
the
van.
Yeah, right?
Yeah,
that's
Rizzo
like
and Kaniki.
You could sit your kid in front and watch it and not be worried about that. Somehow it's just,
Yeah, and then the I'm a defective typewriter, I skipped a period.
Like, yeah.
Years before I realised what that meant. Like, absolutely, you know, years.
Because you're just watching the song.
Yeah, the bit at the end, she comes up to him and says, like, she's not pregnant. And they're like, ooh. And you're like,
what?
Oh, whatever, the song's going to come on now. They're driving away in a car.
Yeah. No, the bit that I always used to watch.
It's one of those movies where I don't remember. Oh, wait.
There was one bit.
Beauty School Dropout.
No, the
Sandy.
The one that Sandy sings with the pool.
Oh, when she's outside.
Hopelessly
yeah.
devoted.
Hopelessly devoted, yeah.
Hated that one. I agree with that. Yeah. Hated that one. Yeah, always skipped through that one.
Yeah. Now, Beauty School Dropout never did it for me.
I really enjoyed that one.
But Hopelessly Devoted was.
I remember a lot of kids at our year six, you know, end of school talent show.
Doing Grease, Megamix.
You better shape up.
Yeah.
Doing that number.
Just having like 10-year-old kids going.
Yeah.
You know that I ain't bragging, she's a real pussy wagon.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great.
It's great. It's lightning.
But I mean, yeah, when I was younger, my favourite songs were, you know, the fast, snappy ones, and of course, Grease Lightning and stuff. But as I've grown, I've really, really taken a new level of enjoyment in the song that Rizzo sings. There are worse things I could do.
She was like in her 30s when she was
Yeah, Stockard Channing. Well,
most of them were, yeah, Stockard Channing.
She's great.
I always get confused, even now, when people mention Channing Tatum. Just keep thinking about Stockard Channing.
What is it? Stockard, Channing, Tatum, O'Neill.
Yes.
It's a good combo. All three of them together and just
a mashed up.
But yeah, I always, you know, I really enjoy that song nowadays. And again, she's like an interesting female character that I like, and there's a bit more to her than what you would kind of pick up on as a child. Yeah, she's a great character, and I've always much preferred Kaneki to Danny Zuko.
Me too. I was a big fan of Kaneki. He had that Zippo lighter with a huge flame on it.
And with the hair and the combing. Oh,
isn't there something interesting about the actor who played Kaneki?
He died recently.
He died a few years ago, yeah. And he was actually on celebrity rehab show.
Yeah.
And he had this, like, you know, debilitating addiction to like pain medication and alcohol and stuff. Really sad end of his life. Really sad. But yeah, I thought he was great in Grease and like much more of a babe than John Travolta. So take that what you will.
Yeah, one of my favorite John Travolta scenes is where they're at the pep rally and he's just like with all the T-Birds and then they push Sandy towards him and he's just like, oh my God, it's you.
And then he just has to change.
It's just perfect, perfect description of how school works.
Yeah, absolutely. Like teenagers in high school, like instantly will turn on you.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, and I just, you know, I love the scene at the school dance with the American bandstand.
Yeah, that is amazing.
That whole section, that whole part of the film is just great with...
Yeah.
The Vince Fontaine, God, he's such a creep, and he just does it so well.
Yeah,
you know,
it's the idea that you know. I remember watching it going, and people coming on and tapping you on the shoulder.
Yeah, and like get out, you suck. Get off the dance floor. That's cold.
Yeah, that is cold. That's cold. Yeah, too bad.
And I was always like so infuriated when that cha-cha
came in and stole Danny away.
Cha-cha, Digga Goro. Like, how could you? Like, Sandy was like nailing it. It was just it was great. And then she came. And she's evil, but.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do? But all the flames on the car and...
Yeah. When was the last time you watched it?
Probably last year.
Oh, really?
Probably haven't seen it in a little while.
And the race.
In the drain or whatever.
It's in every TV show, movie, just that area. They love to film in that area.
And
there's
so many where they have, like, wheels with spikes on them. Yeah. You know.
Cutting
into the side of the car.
That was
classic race moment. I mean, you know, they even put it in that Ryan Gosling movie, Drive.
Drive, yeah.
So they had to have a race scene in the drain.
Yeah.
Because it's such a great... Did it have a spikes?
I don't think so. I think maybe that would have been, like, too far.
Just the drain. Too much of a direct Grease
like,
copy.
Like, slightly too much of a direct Grease copy.
See, for me, the song... I've watched it so many times. The song that grew on me is the first song, like the title song.
Yeah.
How did it go?
The Grease is the Word. The very first song. The animation, I've always loved.
Yeah.
But the song itself, it just, I don't know. It was one of those things where I was like, oh, wait a minute. This is the best song on the soundtrack. Yeah. This is great.
And I remember Frankie when Valley I was little, like, watching the animation and going, oh, that's Rizzo, and that's Keiji, and that's, you know, like, when I was, like, seven, like, oh, they're all here.
And Eugene, oh, Eugene. Oh, I love Eugene. I think he was my first introduction into, you know, high school movie nerds.
Yeah.
Just great.
Well, classes. He's... Again, like the quintessential high school nerd character.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they... Now they've just become stock characters.
Exactly.
Which is great, and it shows, again, like a classic film. And one of the songs that has always been a favourite for me is, of course, you know, look at me, I'm Sandra Dee. Yeah. Like, that whole scene is just hilarious with the teddy bear and the smoking and... the piercing of the ears and everything. It's just like a great scene about, you know, girl sleepover.
Yeah.
Let's do all this stuff we're not supposed to. Gonna climb out the window and go and see the boys. It's fun. It's fun.
It is a fun... One of the best thing about it, though, really, is the fact that Patty Sincox is in that movie.
Oh, yes.
And when I went... I think when South Africa... This is a long pull, I know, but when South Africa started playing cricket again in Australia, they had a player called Pat Sincox, and it was so much fun to go to the cricket and go, hi, Patty Sincox, hi. Like, all day, Patty Sincox. Righto, hi, how you doing?
Righto,
hi. Yeah. But you talked before about how, in Legally Blonde, how Elle, right, is like a, you know, great role model, but what about Sandra Dee? Well, as role models go, the, like, end of the movie.
Oh, the end
of,
she sexes
herself up.
She really does, yeah. She does the opposite of what Elle does. And then she totally changes herself to fit in with her friends. And that, even when I was little, that always disappointed me. Because even though Danny does the same to an extent, you know, he has the jock jacket on at the end, and then he just rips it off and he's back to being himself. So, you know, for him, it's like, I'm fine the way that I am. But I changed a little bit, but I'm okay. But then she just has to totally reinvent herself. But I feel like that's kind of more to fit in with their friends than him. Because when they met, you know, she was just herself. And he liked her that way anyway. And it was really more like the peer pressure.
Yeah, I guess issue. That's true.
But yeah, no, that's a great example of what you shouldn't do.
Yeah. But what could she couldn't just come back and go, no, I'm... Yeah. Going to be myself, and goodbye, everyone. I'm going back to Australia.
Yeah, I mean, you can... But the thing is, it's okay to change your clothes and stuff if you want to. Like, your personality is what your personality is, and people usually like that more than what you wear. And people who like what you wear more than your personality aren't really worth much to have around.
But what about the very end of the movie, where they
drive fly off into the sky.
Yeah,
that always baffled me. Always.
It's so bizarre, though. But
it is so bizarre. You're like, all right, okay, whatever.
I think you just get so taken, you know, like, you're just with it. And
do you know, want to hear something funny, though? When I was really small, I knew that Olivia Newton-John was an Australian, and, of course, Sandy in the film is Australian. And in my brain, I was like, well, you know, they're getting in the car and they're going to drive to Australia.
Yeah, of course. Why wouldn't you?
Like, that's just what's happening now.
So did they, obviously... Like, Olivia Newton-John was hired, but when it was a stage show, which it was first, Sandy wasn't Australian. Did they just make it?
No, they just
movie
had to put that in. I think they because really she wanted couldn't like do an American Olivia accent, Newton-John.
Yeah,
I think they just really
that
wanted
makes her
to.
Like, quite cute, being.
He's very cute being Australian.
Yeah, she's like foreign and like, oh, Zane. Exotic. Yeah, exotic.
So that would have been a big deal for Libby to get that role.
I think so.
Oh, massive! It's made her. It made her career, obviously. Yeah. It's and it would keep on giving. I'm sure she's still getting checks every. Yeah.
Well, you know
every
how
so
they
often
have that like Australia Festival in New York every year. She is always there with John Travolta every flipping year.
Well, I think they're still pretty good friends.
Yeah, I think so. But another thing that I wanted to say about the whole changing herself at the end of the film is that, you know, don't forget they're in high school, and there's a whole lot of stuff you have to do in high school to just survive high school.
Yeah, totally.
And then when you leave, you can be an adult and do what you want and be the way you want to be, and you don't have to worry about people in high school.
But again, it's hardly a message movie.
Yeah.
It's
hardly
a movie that you go, all right, kids, we're going to watch this and you're going to
learn
a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. When you're in a car race, make sure you've got those knife things on the side to cut into the...
But yeah, but every movie doesn't have to have a message, no. And that's fine. So it's just like fun, and you just have to use your brain with pop culture.
Would you see that live show?
I'd probably go and see it again, maybe. Yeah. If somebody else wanted to go, I would go, but I wouldn't go out of my way to go and see it again.
Hey, Zuko!
I got a surprise for you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Sandy!
Teddy?
What are you doing here? I thought you were going back to Australia.
We had a change of plans.
I can't...
Well, that's cool, baby. I mean, you know how it is, rocking and rolling and whatnot.
Danny?
That's my name. Don't wear it out.
What's the matter with you?
What's the matter with me, baby? What's the matter with you?
Yeah. What happened to the Danny Zuko I met at the beach?
Well, I do not know. I mean, maybe there's two of us, right? Why don't you take out a missing persons ad or try the yellow pages? I don't know.
You're a fake and a phony, and I wish I'd never laid eyes on you.
Whoa.
Whoa.
I wonder if she carries silver bullets.
Yeah.
Whoa. So she laid her eyes on you, eh, Zuko?
Hey, I bet that's not all she's laid on him.
You're right.
Hey, Zuko, got that car, remember?
Come on, Danny.
All right, we've got beer money.
Well, I swipe my brother's ID.
I got 250.
All right, give me this.
Now we're gonna move on and we're gonna change course. This is why I was excited to do this podcast because we're gonna go from Grease to Face Off.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
Yet another movie with a message.
Again, being yourself, very important.
Another movie I haven't seen since the 1990s.
And again, I never made the connection, but I didn't even think Travolta's in both of those movies. I didn't even think of that.
He is too. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, I can't lie. I love Face Off.
Okay, high five to you because Face Off is awesome.
It is one of those movies like a little bit embarrassed to say.
No, I'm not even slightly embarrassed
to
say.
Well, obviously not. You've chosen it for your podcast.
It's just ridiculous. Yeah. It's completely stupid and so much fun.
Yeah.
Like, as far as like dumb action movies go, you really can't get much better. The other one I would have picked, if you didn't want to talk about Face Off, would have been Con Air.
Oh,
those two for me, just like. Con Air's great. Shane Pod, and they're both just.
What's that one that had Sean Connery and
The Rock? The Rock, also a great movie.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage. He's terrible in a lot of movies.
He's terrible, but also brilliant. Yeah. And it's his terribleness that makes watching him so enjoyable.
I did hear someone say that in like 50 years, people will be looking back and going, what he was doing was so revolutionary.
He's going to be like the Marlon Brando of our generation.
He was just misunderstood. And he's just made too many terrible movies. But this one is just...
I love Face Off. And it's just, just the whole concept.
Now,
is...
take us through those who haven't seen it. What's the basic premise?
So the premise...
What's the basic premise?
The premise of the film is that there is a villain who...
What's his name?
Caster Troy.
Caster Troy.
And what actor? Who's he?
That's
originally
Nicolas Cage.
Is the bad one.
Yeah, the bad one. Originally.
That's very confusing.
And so then there's John Travolta's character.
Who's
the good one, whose name escapes me right now because it's not as exciting as
Caster
Troy.
No, it's very boring. A very boring name.
It's something Archer. That's right. Something Archer. And... so they need to get some kind of information about... I mean, who cares about the plot, really?
Things happen, they go wrong.
Things happen, and then basically, so they decide that they are going to put Archer, the policeman, undercover into a high-security prison.
Yeah.
And in order to protect his identity, what they're going to do is they're going to take Caster Troy, who is already in prison, and they're going to
coma. He's in a coma,
Yeah. And what they do is they take both of their faces off and swap them.
Yeah.
And then they give them, like, various body, like, liposuction surgeries or whatever to make them, you know, as completely, you know, the opposite to what they are. So they turn Caster Troy into Archer and Archer into Caster Troy.
I hope on YouTube I can find the exposition scene where they go, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do. Because if I can find that, I'm going to put it on here because it's just amazing.
It's great. And just like the whole... And so we have this paperwork and only me and this guy will know about it.
Yeah, that's right. And no one will ever know.
I just love it. It's like, what police officer would agree to undergoing...
And it's like really personal because Castor Troy in the past, like many years prior, has like... tried to have Archer murdered, but in turn has like actually murdered his young son.
Right, yeah.
Oh, put his face on me.
And
yeah,
so
fine.
Yeah, like I'll have this guy's face.
What's even better there is that Castor wakes up and then goes, "You put his face on me,
yeah,
or
and
I'll kill you."
And so
done. Now
guy,
I killed you. And
so
then...
yeah, so the evil guy is a member of the police, and so it's just. Completely ridiculous premise, and
so they escape from this situation.
Yeah, so basically,
he wakes
the
up
the Archer as Castor Troy gets put into this high security prison, and he has to he finds out that when Castor Troy as Archer visits him in prison.
Oh, that's amazing
and,
scene!
And he says, "I've got this like bureaucratic crappy police job to do. Later, buddy. By the way, I've got your face. I'm gonna go home and fuck your wife."
Yeah,
like I'm pretty sure that's quite close to what he says. And then so Archer as Castor Troy has to break out of this like extremely high security prison,
right,
which is actually on an oil rig in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
And it's just. The whole... it's just so stupid.
That scene is amazing. You've got Nicolas Cage and John Travolta playing the other person inside their own skin.
That's great.
Yeah. It has one of my favourite lines, which I've heard John Travolta wasn't happy with, which was... So John Travolta's playing Nicolas Cage inside his face, and he says, "Do you think I would choose this face? This ridiculous chin." What a great line, but apparently, John, I don't know if that's true or not, but I have heard John Travolta was like, "I don't want to say that.
I don't want to say that about my face."
Yeah, I know. It's a pretty weird thing to say.
Yeah, well, I heard that Nicolas Cage was actually, did not want to do the movie because he didn't want to be the villain. But then when he realized that he would actually be playing the good guy as the villain, he decided to sign on to the movie. And it was only for a brief time at the beginning and the end when he was going to be the villain.
Yeah, well, because I like... It's a John Woo film, too, and I'd seen The Killers, like his Hong Kong, which is, again, a crazy over-the-top.
Yeah.
People shooting... It's famous, shooting in slow motion with doves in a church and feathers and lights.
The doves in the church, again, in Face Off.
Yeah,
that's like a big John Woo, like, trademark that he has, and... Just everything about it is so dramatic, and I love any stupid action movie that tries to make itself smart. Because, Castor Troy's brother is called Pollux.
That's right.
And Castor and Pollux are stars in, the Gemini constellation, I think. And then Archer is the Sagittarius constellation, which is the opposite end of the... constellations to the Gemini. So they're like polar opposites.
That's amazing.
And
I've never even thought of that.
Did you research this?
Yeah, I read about it on the internet yesterday.
That's amazing that it's gone to...
But, it's such a dumb movie. Why would you put
much
effort?
It's cerebral.
And I just love that
layers.
When you have a really silly movie and then they put in, details like that and you go and read about it on the IMDb page, and they have all these ridiculous details that nobody would ever care about, apart from me, apparently, because I went and read them all.
Yeah, exactly. specifically with this movie, I remember watching it. So it was me and two other guys and three of our female friends.
Yeah.
And all the guys loved it, and all the girls were like, "What the hell is that?" Like, that was the stupidest, most ridiculous movie. And we were like, how good was that? That was the stupidest, most ridiculous movie I've ever seen.
What I enjoy about it. Actually, I probably watched that film, 6 months ago or whatever, because a female friend and I, we decided that we were going to have a Nick Cage night. And we watched Face Off and Con Air. And we also rented The Rock, but kind of fell asleep before we got to that one. But it was so much fun watching those two together.
Yeah, I bet.
And we had, a whole bunch of friends over, and we were, yelling the lines at the TV. It was great. It was just such a fun night. And you as far as ridiculous action movies go, you really can't beat it.
Oh. How are we supposed to do that?
He's vulnerable at home.
No. I mean, this is Sean Archer we're talking about. This isn't just some Boy Scout.
Fitch.
Well, no, besides, his house is probably alarmed up the wazoo.
The code is 10-1986. That's his dead son's birthday. Don't it just break your heart?
Huh. That's brilliant. That's sick. How is it that you know so much about Sean Archer?
I sleep with his wife.
What?
That's great.
So, once we kidnap Super Cop, then what?
Tiny surgery. I'd like to take his face off. If you excuse me, I have to use the little boy's wee-wee room.
Cat. You want to take his face?
Yes. His face.
Oh. No, and it starts with like a set piece that would finish every, that had finished every movie up until that point. Like this huge explosion, planes flying and all this stuff. And you're like, oh, that's the first
that's
20
the
minutes.
That's the beginning. Yeah, like it's great. And
it's out of control.
You know, just all of the silly, the completely ridiculous dialogue that Castor Troy says is, as a villain, like, for example, one that has always stuck in my brain is, if I was to let you suck my tongue, would you be grateful? Like, just that has just always
says
just
it
been
to the
in
stewardess,
my mind.
Right?
Like,
in the plane.
Said it, who's actually an FBI agent.
Yeah.
And, and then he's got his golden guns and stuff. And then the bit where his like, girlfriend makes out with her brother after he gets shot in the neck. Like, it's just such a crazy film. And then the weird dynamic between Castor as Archer
and
Archer's
daughter.
That bit where he comes home and he's like herbing on her in her underwear.
Papa's got a brand new bag.
God, there's just so much about it. That's
did
really
he end
creepy.
Up bedding the wife?
Yeah, he did as
he
well,
did.
I think.
Yeah, it is creepy.
And then at the end...
oh, that she wouldn't notice. It's a completely different body.
And then at the end, like...
yeah, it's a totally different body. It's just the face.
It's just a face.
It's a face, yeah.
And then at the end when they have, you know, he's trying to... The daughter has the gun and they're both trying to convince her who is who, and she like ends up shooting the wrong guy.
How hard would that have been to convince your daughter who you are?
Yeah, who you are. Just like a few personal
details. Yeah, a few personal memories.
Wouldn't have been hard.
Yeah, embarrassing, horribly embarrassing stories.
Remember
like,
at your like seventh birthday party when I did this
thing?
What
were they saying to try and convince her?
I can't even remember. It's just like...
Look at me.
Like,
look at my
me,
eyes.
Like,
don't you know who I am?
Look at my face.
Yeah.
That's just been transplanted.
But yeah, another reason that I really love that movie is because my friend Lauren and I... at the end of the day, if we've, like, been, you know, like, gone out and got hammered together or whatever, it's time to go home and take our makeup off, we say, I'm going to take my face off. And then you go into the bathroom and you wash your face and you're back to you again.
You come back as Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, every time, Connecto, take my face off. It's just really fun. And then you have to do the hand movement as well.
Yeah.
And the hand stroking thing.
Yeah.
That's a big, that's like a big feature in that film. And it will freak people out if you do it to them. If you just go up and like run your palm down their face, they will flip out and they will like smack your hand away. And say, what the hell are you doing? It's great. You should try it sometime.
Just in general.
Just do it. Just go up and do it to people. Just like, hey, and then stroke your hand down their face. They will flip out. It's great. It's really fun.
Why wouldn't they?
I just don't think I want to watch that again because I have such good memories of, like, really, really enjoying it.
I know the last teenager. Half hour I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, yeah.
But you know what I read? Apparently, you know that big boat chase scene at the end? Yeah. They made that for an entirely different movie.
I believe it.
And then just slotted it into Face Off, like, oh, yeah, well, we've got this boat chase scene.
Just a few cuts of Nicolas Cage and John Travolta on a boat getting wet, and then that's
yeah,
it.
That's it. And then they're just like, yeah, well, you can just have that scene. It's fine. Like, we'll
shoehorn something else. Yeah.
Sounds about right. We need one more thing. Yeah.
We just let's just shove a boat chase scene in there. Great.
That's what all these movies seem like to me. They're on a boat. Oh, they're chasing a plane. It's just explosion, another explosion.
Yeah, you're a big fan of those, aren't you? You love those movies.
But I have this really clear memory of being in high school and a friend of mine coming in and saying that she'd been to the movies. I think we were about 16. It was like year 10, saying she had seen The Rock, and I remember her going into detail like. Specific detail about this movie and like generally being, oh my god, that sounds like
sounds amazing.
Amazing. Seriously. Couldn't wait to get myself to the movies to see it. And it is like now of the kind of movie that I just my tastes have changed somewhat.
Yeah, well, we've all heard your depressing podcast.
Exactly.
But I wasn't. Oh, I was so excited about The Rock.
All right, we're gonna take it back. Like I said, this one jumps all over the shop. This one I haven't seen, and I don't know if you've seen, Justine. But this is Mutiny on the Bounty.
Yeah.
So from Face Off to a period piece.
Mutiny on the Bounty.
It's Anthony Hopkins, right?
No, it's he might have done a version of it, but the one that I'm thinking of is the one with Marlon Brando.
Oh.
No, I don't think I've seen it.
And I'm going to be honest. I have only seen it once. But I had the best time watching it, probably because the day that I saw it, I went in the morning and I had dental surgery. And the painkillers that they gave me were spectacular. Like, afterwards, I went home, my mom, like, plopped me down on the couch. I had, like, this giant, like, swollen face. It was from when I got a tooth implant. Like, so they, like, drilled an implant into my jawbone.
When was this?
When I was, like, 18. And so, you know, Mum put me down on the couch, took the drugs, and kind of she said, oh, is there anything you need? And made me, you know, a cup of tea and kind of relaxed. And I thought, oh, I might just turn on the telly, turn on some Foxtel and see what's on. Turner Classic Movies. Mutiny on the Bounty is starting. Oh, this'll do. Had this weird thing in my head where I thought about how, you know how you have on those beer like bottle lids, trivia questions. And I remember one day, one of the questions, like many, many years ago, was something like, what was the item that the mutineers on the Bounty threw over the ship, you know, in protest? And we asked my dad, and instantly, breadfruit trees. Instantly knew, and we were just like, why would you possibly know that? So he told us about the Mutiny on the Bounty, which is, you know, about this Captain Bligh who sails around the Pacific Islands, and, you know, it's in the colonial times, and they're carrying these breadfruit trees, and there's not enough water for the crew, and this is from what I can remember, because as I said, I was on some pretty great drugs at the time, some great painkillers. And so, yeah, they like, decide to have a mutiny, and they throw the breadfruit trees off, and they, like, get rid of I think they leave the captain of the ship marooned on an island, and then they sail to Tahiti, I'm pretty sure, and they decide to spend a lot of time there with the local Pacific Islanders, and I think one of the main characters actually ends up with one of the Pacific Islander women. And so it's kind of this story about like colonialism and cross-cultural kind of confusions and communications and all that sort of stuff. But in my delirious state, all I really took in was how like resplendent Marlon Brando looked in that uniform. And you know, it was like you know, at the beginning, in full Technicolor. It was like, you know, one of his first color movies. Yeah. And he was probably like in his 30s or 40s or something. I don't know. But I just had the best time watching this film. I was absolutely enraptured by it. And again, like you said, Justine, I actually don't want to ever see it again because I don't want to sully my memory of this great viewing experience when I like had dental surgery and watched it sitting on the couch with my mouth like dripping with blood. I just had such a great
time.
Nothing
could beat that.
No,
it was just, it was, and I actually think Marlon Brando actually ended up marrying the woman who played the his love interest in the film Pacific Islander Woman. And they were together for a few years, or maybe they never got married, but yeah, he had a relationship with her, and he was kind of very protective of her, from what I can gather. But yeah, it's a great movie, and it looks, it's very fun. It probably has a lot of horribly incorrect cultural stereotypes about Pacific Islander people, you know, with like the lei and,
yeah,
you know, the whole
some good
chieftain
50s racism
and,
in
yeah,
there.
probably. So I'd probably be horrified maybe if I saw it again. I really enjoyed it when I watched it, and I really like Marlon Brando, and he wears this funny little wig. It's just, it's great. And I always enjoy those movies where you see like the colonials in their like stockings and their wool coats and their like shirts that come up to the bottom of their chin, and then they're in like this tropical paradise with these people who are just wearing, you know, like they're shirtless and they have, you know, the hair blowing in the breeze, and there's these silly white guys in wigs, and they just look so stupid. They just look ridiculous. So yeah, I love that movie.
But Jazz, you're a big Brando fan.
I don't mind Brando, yeah.
Like any time.
Yep.
Early Brando, not...
Well, have you seen Streetcar?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, he looks great in that.
He looks great. He's horrible, but he looks good.
He looks good.
He looks really good in that.
Women are so shallow.
Yeah, or Marlon.
Have you seen On the Waterfront?
It's no.
You've never seen... Oh, well.
That's a
I don't
great
think
one
so.
Well.
Yes, you need to see that.
Yeah, I'm...
Great, you
I'm
know,
really
I should have been a contender. You know, you've never seen that?
That's a great one, too.
It is a great film.
And he's also, like, I quite like him, and I've seen the Wild One, which is where the Black Rebel Motorcycle Club comes from.
Yeah.
So that's...
You liked him in... Oh, that movie's so corny.
It's so corny. It's so cheesy. It's like, yeah, I'm such a bad guy on my motorbike.
Yeah, all these, like, very well-trained actors are riding into town on motorcycles being tough.
And they're all, like, really shiny motorbikes and nice crisp leather jackets. And
they're all beautifully faced young men, and they're all like, whoa, we are rough, and we are rough and ready, and we are rebellious.
Yeah,
we're gonna tip bins over and push
people's
menus off the table, and
and then we're going to steal a beer from over the counter of a bar. Like,
and then we're gonna ride away noisily on our motorbikes.
Yeah, but it's kind of about a moral panic, you know. Yeah. Like they're not like as we were just saying, they're not that bad, the biker dudes. Like they're really not a menace at all, but they're... The reaction of the people in the town is like...
Keep our girls
away
from
them. Quite severe. And... Like, yes, get your hands off our women, boys! You know, that sort of thing. Like, how dare you touch our women?
You terribly clean-shaven young man.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's also a fun movie. But yeah, I really like Marlon Brando.
That mainmast needs attention, Mr. Fryer.
Aye, aye, sir.
Mr. Christian, kindly give me an explanation.
Williams has been drinking seawater, sir. I was giving him some fresh water. I'm afraid he'll die without it.
You give no one water without my permission. Take that ladle below.
Yes, sir.
You'll not put your foot on me again.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been puzzling for a means to take the strut out of you, you posturing snob. Now you've solved that for me, haven't you?
We'll move on to the last film, which is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, yes.
Which is... Yeah, one of my favorite films.
Mm.
Damn.
I love Damn.
we're going to tax bars. Yeah.
I just love as well. A friend of mine, he likes to say when he's putting his hair gel in, I'm a Dapper Dan man.
He's got hair gel? That's awesome. So, I don't want fop, goddammit. I'm a Dapper Dan man. Oh, yeah. There's
just so many great one-liners. Like, we thought you was a toad.
No, damn. Nah, anyway, I'm not going to sit here. I could very easily.
Could just quote the whole film.
There's a movie where I watched the first time.
Yeah.
Really high.
Oh, yeah.
And it was too strange.
Yeah.
And the delivery was, yeah, took me ages to understand, yeah, what the hell. The first scene with George Clooney, he gets on the train and he's like, blah, 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 blah,
yeah,
and I was like, what did he actually say there?
And then he gets yanked off.
He gets yanked off and it's all just out of weirdness. And I watched it, I think I hired it and I had it for the week.
Yeah.
And then I watched it and I was like, that was weird. And then the next day, the songs,
yeah,
were in my head. Yeah. And I thought,
great,
I'm
going to
watch it again.
Absolutely.
I'm going to watch it again for the songs.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons and that I enjoyed it so much, yeah, as well, because the soundtrack is so beautiful.
The more,
yeah,
and the more I think
it's half of the movie, really.
Literally,
yeah,
watched that movie every day,
yeah,
that week.
Yeah.
And so I was just obsessed with it. And yeah, I might have rehired it and watched it.
Yeah.
Because the music was great, but the lines.
Yeah. The delivery of everything. And, like, the story that you just get so wrapped up in this quest that these guys are on. And they're kind of, some of them, like, really reprehensible figures. And then there's the one who's just kind of plodding along, who just kind of has to keep up, and
yeah,
you kind of get the impression that he would have been okay on the chain gang for just a little while longer,
yeah,
and then, you know, of course, and then you find out that he's almost at the end of his sentence anyway when they leave, and it's just, and it's filmed so beautifully, like, it just looks great, and the colours, it's kind of really suits the era that it's set in, I think.
Yeah, they really did the muted colours, and yeah, some scenes are very yellow, and
yeah,
some...
And just, like, a great set of characters.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I love that shot where, you know, the sheriff, I think it's the sheriff, he comes in and they're just about to hang them. And you see, like, they string up the nooses over them and you see the fire.
In his reflection in his glasses.
Just shots like that, just incredible. Make it an incredible film.
It's a weird movie, though. Like, there's three guys on the chain gang. They escape because...
Yeah.
George Clooney's character's got treasure buried,
yeah,
and they're going to have flood the
valley.
They're going to flood the valley.
So he has to make it to there before they do that. So it's such a strange bunch of characters and a strange kind of wending. And I guess when you think about the fact that they based it on the Odyssey, it kind of starts to make more sense. But
yeah.
It's just, you know, classic Coen Brothers, I think. Just slightly bewildering.
Bewildering.
But...
And not knowing
at
what
first,
you're
especially,
yeah,
the first few times, even.
Yeah.
Where you're like...
Yeah.
Oh. So unique. And that's what's great about their films,
yeah,
isn't it? They're just each... They're very unique.
Mm.
And got their own look. And
always have a great script.
Great script. Yeah. Yeah.
And they make... And each movie is its own world. That's,
yeah,
what's amazing.
That's
like, Fargo is just...
It creates,
yeah,
its own world.
So specifically,
mm,
that. That's what it is. They're all specific.
Yeah.
They're great films.
And the
like
nuances,
that,
the detail, just this beautiful detail.
But it's the script just... That's the thing. The thing, it just keeps on delivering line after line.
Mm.
And Papio Daniels and all these cars. John Goodman as, like, the Cyclops figure
so
is amazing.
So terrifying.
Yeah.
Terrifying,
you know, when you,
yeah,
realise that he turns on them, I was just so shocked. I remember this, like, visceral reaction to him smacking him in the face with a tree branch. Or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, kicking
I
him.
Just, I couldn't believe that he'd done that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was a movie that my sister introduced me to. I'd, probably when I was, like, 13 or 14 or I don't know what year it came out exactly, but...
Yeah.
My sister had been... She was back visiting from university and she was like, oh, I've got this movie, we should watch it, it's great.
Right.
And I was instantly like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, the soundtrack especially really just nailed it for me.
Yeah.
Like, the scene where they go in and they sing I Am a Man of Constant Sorrow for the first time in the studio.
Yeah.
And, you know, they make that joke about how, you know, these, you know, there's seven of us, but three of us will have to sign X's.
Yeah, that man, yeah. George Clooney knows how to spin a con in every single way he possibly can.
That's brilliant. It's brilliant.
Murph and Aloysius will have to sign with X's because only four of us can write. All right, that'll be fine. This year they've got the blind guy riding the railroad at the start. Yeah. It's just, there's so many strange things going on. And and the delivery, the things, the whole bit where they go to the farm, to Pete's cousin's farm.
Oh,
and
my
start,
God, yes. And that's one of my favourite parts.
He keeps saying, like, she done an R-U-N-N-O-F-T.
Like, what?
But the first time I was like, are you run, not run off?
Are you N-O-F-T? Run off.
She done run off.
Yeah, but my favourite line in that movie is... it's a fool who looks for logic in the chambers of the human heart.
That's right.
I love that. There's just something about that line that just gives me little chills whenever I hear it.
Yeah, he's got some great lines.
Yeah. But the scene as well where I think it's Pete or Delmar, whichever one it is, who goes and gets baptized in the river.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
God, be a son of a bitch. Delmar's just been saved.
Yeah.
And he just runs
just
down.
Been saved, and he just runs in and like pushes somebody else out of the way.
He done washed all my sins away. Yeah, that's fine, but it ain't no fun with the county sheriff. And so many good lines.
Yeah, it's just, you know.
You two are dumber than a box of hammers. Like, that's a great line too. Baptism.
And the bit with the sirens.
Yeah.
I love that part with these mysterious women washing their clothes and then they just kind of drug them all and take, is it Pete away?
Turn him into a toad.
Turn him into a toad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that when they're all dressed in white?
Yeah.
Emmy Lou. Is it Emmy Lou Harris?
I don't know who it is.
I can't remember.
Gillian Welch, Emmy Lou, and what's the other girl's name? I can't remember.
What's the song?
What's it called?
You and Me and the Devil Makes
That's
Three.
It.
That
yeah.
one. That's just
yeah.
such a great song. And I just,
that's a really memorable scene, that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the songs are all...
Oh, great.
Such
oh, great. It's got the Ku Klux Klan in it.
Yes, that bit. And then, of course, Tommy Johnson selling his soul.
Yeah.
He sold his soul to the devil
sold
so he could play guitar. But yeah, and that scene with the Ku Klux Klan, I didn't really know anything about them before I saw that film. So that, for me,
the
was
Ku Klux
kind of
Klan.
My first... Like, I knew, like, oh, you know, some guys in America, they're racist.
Yeah.
But I didn't have that visual picture of the things
the
that they would have
cross,
done. Yeah,
had
a fiery
seen
cross.
Mississippi
no,
burning,
I'd
I
never
guess.
Seen anything like that. And, you know, that whole, we're going to kill this black man.
Yeah.
You know, that scene
hatred.
Is just
yeah.
so powerful and it really gripped me. I was
just,
you know, shocked by it because, you know, being the age that I was, it was something that I hadn't really... considered before, you know, when you're like 13, 14.
No.
You're gonna think about things like this and you hear about the way that people treat each other, but you don't have like a visual language for it. And so when you see it for the first time, it really kind of leaves an impression, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's really unsettling, that's Coen Brothers through and through. They have all these ha ha, you're laughing all the way through and then you're
and
just
then
like,
something really
hits you in the pit of the stomach.
Shocking will happen.
They do that in a lot of movies. Untimely deaths and things like that where you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Like Fargo's like that. There's all these people dying but you're kind of like, oh, I'm having
a
good time.
It was
a
great movie.
I love
and all of a sudden
Fargo.
You're like, oh, that's not cool.
Yeah.
It's a bit full on.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's very tense, that movie, but there's bits of humour in it as well.
Great.
And the
yeah,
subject
Marge
matter
and,
is
Marge
so
Gunderson
grim.
And her husband.
Marge Gunderson.
Oh, yeah. She's such a great character.
Oh, she's
I have to question your police work there. Anyway, I'm just going to sit here quoting Coen Brothers movies. But
he doesn't have characters like in some movies where they're just there or don't.
Yeah,
do.
None of
all
them
of his
there.
Characters.
Yeah.
They're just all defined and thought out and everything's there for a purpose. They're just.
But even in that movie, like the cast is so amazing. Like Holly Hunter's in it for. Like three or four scenes, but she's perfectly cast. They wrote, they just write for specific people.
Yeah.
We want you to be this guy. And that just makes a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love her new fiancé.
Oh,
in all words.
Yeah, and the fight scene is amazing. He just gets his ass
squaring
whipped.
Up and he just
keeps
he's
punching
out.
Him out.
It's
kicks
just...
his ass out onto the street. And...
So, I love the way that they do that, the Coen brothers. Like you said, they have this brilliant comedic timing for the way that they manipulate their actors around the scenes and then suddenly, boom, they'll hit you with something that is just...
Well, the whole thing that's...
Yeah.
Where the back of your brain knows that they're going to be okay.
Yeah.
But the point, where, like you say, where they start doing up the nooses, yeah. You're like, this is, the tone of this has just so gone so dark,
yeah.
And like now they will die. I don't know what's going to happen. You just get sucked into it.
Yeah.
I guess that's what filmmaking does. You've seen enough movies that you know usually what's going to happen.
Yeah. But they are the kind of unpredictable filmmakers as well, where they could easily just kill off one of their main characters. You know?
Yeah.
They've done it in other films where somebody you think is the protagonist, like at last, you know, they're dead.
Yeah. Yeah, what was the one with Burn After Reading where...
Yeah.
Where they just go, oh, Brad Pitt's character.
Brad Pitt.
Yes.
Shot in the face.
He's a doofus. Oh, he's pretty... Oh,
yeah,
he's
pretty... Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, and
unexpected.
That's one of... I mean, that's my favourite bit in that movie because it's so, like, shocking. You know? I remember when I saw it, I was in the movies. I started laughing. I was like, ah! And I just started pissing myself because I couldn't believe that it had happened.
Right,
and just the look on Brad Pitt's face when he opens the cupboard. He's like, hey! It's great.
And they switch tone, you know? Like,
it usually is just one bit where it just, I always find, it just hits you in the...
Yeah.
You're like, okay, you know, like they just kill off people. Yeah.
Yeah, so when you see one of their films where all of the protagonists make it through to the end, it's always kind of like a relief.
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
They didn't do it in this movie.
It's pretty rare that happens. I mean, like No Country for Old Men's a prime example. Like, that was a movie, sooner it started, you're like, I have no idea
who's going to live,
who's going to die. There's not just a good guy and a bad guy. There's other people coming in. And then the end of it, you're like, oh.
There's that then.
Oh, okay.
I guess that's how that happened.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, my brother were out there, I think. I overdosed on it.
Mm.
And it was a while before I watched it. We went to America for Christmas, and the old stereotype southerner who we stayed with, he loved it.
Yeah.
So he put it on one night, and we sat there, watched it together. And
I always wonder about that when you have a really strong stereotype in a film for a particular region and time, how people within that region feel about it. You know, they feel like, oh, this is a really kind of terrible way of showing it.
He was very
southern and very traditional, and he loved it because I think it is done in a really
It's very nice,
loving way.
They're all very real, apart from the people trying to kill and all that stuff. Mm. They're all very gentle, sweet people most of the time.
But it's
a great film. But as far as lists go for like this podcast, it's a very fun. That was a very fun list when you sent it to me. I was like, oh, this is really fun.
Yeah. Total opposite to mine. All like
of course.
Yeah. Well, I could talk about grim movies
make you feel good to watch them. These ones.
Yeah, basically. I mean, when I think about movies, what I want to watch most of the time is something that is gonna like get me through my day. You know, like of course I love
not
the grim movies
curled
as well.
Up and
you know, sobbing. I mean, because sometimes I find that it's just too much. Like, I went to see Never Let Me Go in the movies, and I went home and I cried for like 3 hours because it just like really got to me. You know,
I'll put it on my list.
Yeah, that'll be on your list. Yeah,
you'll
great.
Go and see it, and you'll talk about it in the next one.
Mm. Oh, that's what I keep saying to Matt. Talked about that one.
It just keeps happening to me. You know, I'll see something that's like a little bit sad, like Into the Wild. Even though that guy is a fucking idiot, when that was over, I was like devastated. I was like, oh my god, I can't believe that happened.
It was really sad.
And then you think about it, you're like, well, that guy was kind of dumb for doing what he did.
Yeah.
And I mean, again, also Eternal Sunshine, that really like just ripped the heart out of me. And so I just got to this point where I want to have fun when I watch a movie.
Yeah.
I just want to see something stupid, and I love it.
All right. I think that'll do it. I think that's it.
Thank you.
And we're done.
Mind if we join you, old timer?
Jive me, my son. Jive.
You work for the railroad, Grandpa?
I work for no man.
You got a name, do you?
I have no name.
Well, that right there may be the reason you've had difficulty finding gainful employment. You see, in the mart of competitive commerce...
You seek a great fortune. You three who are now in chains, you will find a fortune. Though it will not be the fortune you seek. But first you must travel a long and difficult road. A road fraught with peril. Mm-hmm. You shall see things wonderful to tell. You shall see a cow on the roof of a cotton house. And oh, so many startlements. I cannot tell you how long this road shall be, but fear not the obstacles in your path, for fate has vouchsafed your reward. Though the road may wind, yea, your hearts grow weary, still shall ye follow the way, even unto your salvation.